right, so let's get started with our third episode. Seth, if for those that don't know, Seth got into an injury, a snowboarding injury, and that prevented us from actually doing our third episode on time. At least our goal was to do it every 2 weeks. So we couldn't do it because of that, but now he's feeling a lot better, and here we are. So, Seth, do you want to get started with our first topic, Langenfurt?
Yeah, so it's funny. I'm finding as I study synthetics more and I study more about the topics that we discuss on this, I'm finding more about food than I am about synthetic products. We know about the racetams. We'll get into those more at some point, but I'm more interested in foods that or drug-like foods. And I found this one called Euphoria Longan. And it contains epicatechins, which we're familiar with from green tea, as well as adenosine and adenine, uridine and methyluridine, and GABA. And there's one other one called loganolactone, which has a pyrrolidone structure similar to, which is what paracetam and its derivatives are based off of. And it may have some cognition enhancing effects and has some significant neuroprotective effects.
Awesome.
One of the things that I think is interesting from a relevant perspective for this current season is there's a huge flu epidemic right now. People are getting sick all over the place. I haven't gotten sick, but just about everybody I know has. And there's some research showing that antioxidant properties, like the antioxidant properties in Euphoria longan, actually fight the influenza virus and prevent it from proliferating in the body.
Wow. Yeah, supposedly this has been used for a while now in Chinese traditional medicine. According to what I found, the Chinese have used this for insomnia, anxiety, improved skin health, improved immunity, and even improved blood circulation. So apparently it's got a lot of promising features that can help someone stay healthy. So.
Yeah, that's what I'm loving about finding these more unique foods that people may not be familiar with. I haven't tried Euphoria longan, but I want to try some. It has a lot of these fruits and veggies that I'm finding, like the asparagus that I've talked about on the first episode, I think, are that they have these broad spectrum effects. They're anti-inflammatory, like longan is. They reduce immunosuppression or they enhance immunoactivity. They have strong antioxidant properties. So, whereas something like piracetam, which has a very fine target, these have broad effects that are beneficial across the body in various pathways. A couple of the things that were mentioned are, in addition to the flu effects, it has a memory enhancement due to the longanolactone. It's anti-inflammatory. It increases neuronal survival, possibly enhances BDNF. It has anti-cancer effects. It induces apoptosis in cancer cells at the same level as EGCG from green tea, probably due to the catechins that it contains. Like you mentioned, it protects the skin. And
Interestingly, yeah, go ahead.
oh, go ahead. Oh, the last thing was it increases C-Reb, which is responsible for long-term potentiation, which we're all familiar with.
That's awesome. I was going to say that the nickname in China, or at least in traditional Chinese medicine, for this is called Dragon's Eye Meat.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, I guess
I
it
love
was a
it.
prized. It's been a prized herb. Anything to do with dragons usually means it's a prized substance or herb.
Right. I actually have a copy of the Chinese Materia Medica from the early 2000s, and it's really hard to find anything in it to actually search through it because I don't speak Chinese. But I was able to find it in there. Unfortunately, it has really bizarre, they describe things in such an unusual way. They said things like it enhances positive wind. and trying to find out what that means was pretty difficult. It has something to do with how the liver and kidneys process toxins and other undesirable compounds in the body. But I wasn't able to find a specific explanation of what that means. But they clearly were very good at identifying the benefits of the foods they ate.
Yeah, that sounds like it's a nice way of saying that helps you pass gas or something.
No, it didn't have anything to do with actual wind. It was something to do with the way, you know, I don't really like to use chi because I don't really understand it and because it's a fairly primitive concept. Mm-hmm. But it has something to do with the way chi travels throughout the body.
Got it.
Or the wind behind the sails that moves the chi around the body.
Yeah. So apparently this is very easy to consume. You just get the dried longan berries. They're referred to as berries. And you boil some water like you're going to make some tea. You can even use one of your favorite teas, either green tea or black tea, and put the four berries or a few berries at the bottom of your teacup and just pour the water over it and let it stew for about 1 to 2 minutes. And that's it. That's all you got to do.
That's awesome. I actually found it while I was researching lychee, which is related genetically to Dimocarpus longan or Euphorbia longan. And I hear that lychee is delicious. So I'm curious to see what this tastes like, whether or not it tastes as good as lychee does. I've had lychee flavored drinks, but I've never actually had a lychee fruit.
Interesting. What did that taste like? Was it sweet or bitter?
Yeah, I mean, it was a drink, so it was probably sweetened and designed to taste good. But it just tasted like you'd expect any kind of berry flavored drink to taste, more like a red fruit than anything.
Yeah.
But it was far removed from the actual fruit. So I don't know how it would relate to the taste of the fruit itself.
Okay, cool. So yeah, for anyone that wants to try an interesting new herb that helps with insomnia and anxiety and a host of other things like improved immunity and skin health, I would recommend giving it a try and letting us know how it goes. Longan fruit, it's called. And in China, it's referred to as dragon's eye meat. So yeah, for the next topic that we're going to discuss, Seth, previously you talked about your experience with cold showers. How has that been going? Like, have you been seeing improved benefits? Is it cumulative?
Yeah, I'm feeling pretty lean right now. I've been eating a lot of healthier foods as well, which is helping. After I messed up my back snowboarding, I took some time to eat right, try to exercise my back and get those muscles around my back to kind of support me. But I found some interesting stuff about it. I had to read more about it since I talked about it, but didn't really have a lot of good information. It turns out there are proteins in the body called heat shock proteins. And heat stress and cold stress are both activators of heat shock proteins, as well as heat stress and cold stress releasing norepinephrine. Heat shock proteins have all kinds of interesting benefits on the body. And I don't want to go into too much of that because they cover a really broad range of things. But they're a fascinating protein, and there's something that I'll be doing more reading about. Maybe we can do a bit on those when we're done with my fascination with fruits and vegetables.
Sure.
But talking about, you know, I don't really like to make generic comments on things that I don't fully understand. So it kind of bothered me to say, it seems like I feel healthier. It seems like I feel thinner or leaner. So I did some more reading on that. And it turns out the norepinephrine released caused by heat shock proteins and heat stress triggers the browning of fat, and it's released during cold exposure. And brown fat is more metabolically active. Basically, white fat or light fats are stored energy, and brown fats are readily available energy. And so when you trigger the browning of fat, that fat can be converted into energy more easily. And if you're on a low glucose diet or you're reducing glucose, your body will use that fat and will take less energy to convert it.
Wow.
The one more interesting thing I found was that cold exposure also activates PGC1 alpha. It's a master regulator of mitochondrial biogenesis, which is basically the top gene in a hierarchy or a cascade of genes that cause things like mitochondrial biogenesis to happen, or alters, you know, put more scientifically, it alters the expression of downstream genes in a pathway. Basically, I was talking to somebody about mitochondrial biogenesis because they're interested in increasing it. And this is kind of a first step or a key step in activating more mitochondria being produced in the body.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, it sounds like this is something people should at least try. And personally, I would do it in the morning. And then in the evening time, maybe after the gym or after exercising, I would get in a sauna to get the benefits of the other end of the spectrum and just do that, you know. Mornings are cold showers, and then evenings just get in the sauna and give yourself both extremes, you know, see how that goes.
Yeah, that's called contrast therapy.
Yeah.
The cool thing about it is that it's kind of a 1-2 punch. You're converting your white fat into brown fat, making it more metabolically active, and at the same time creating more mitochondria in your body, which allows you to produce more energy, you know. And at this point, looking at the whole body, if you want to be more energetic, you want to have a healthier body, you want to have the willpower to do the things you need to do, you need to have a healthy, lean body with ample mitochondria and the ability to convert ATP into energy as quickly as possible, so that you can maintain energy throughout the day.
Yeah, and both of these things only have, from what I've read, they only have positive effects on the body. Unless you just go a little too extreme, it might have a negative effect. But if you stay within reason, these two therapies can actually be very, very beneficial to people in many areas, including depression, people who have anxiety, people who want to lose weight, men who want to increase their natural testosterone. So there are a lot of reasons to incorporate this into your lifestyle. One thing that I came across recently, it was actually on Reddit. It's kind of related, but this study from 1965 basically took an extremely obese 27-year-old male. He was weighing 456 pounds, and they made him fast for 382 days.
Literally. Wow.
Like, he fasted. He was just taking multivitamins, potassium, and I believe that was it. Just water, potassium tablets, and multivitamins. Obviously, the potassium was going to keep his heart from, like, going out, and the multivitamins are basically replacing your nutritional needs for the day. So within that approximate year, he lost 275.5 pounds. So that was more than half of his body weight. And he lived to, you know, see the next day.
We should mention between contrast therapy and extreme fasting that you need to be in under medical care or in a state of good health before you do these kinds of things. There have been cases of contrast therapy causing people to faint either in extreme cold or extreme heat temperatures. There was one case of a smoker drowning. So if you smoke, first of all, don't. You're too young to smoke. Even if you're 70, you're too young to smoke. But second of all, be with a buddy or somebody who can help you out if something happens, and make sure you're in tip-top shape.
Exactly. Yeah, of course, this guy was being monitored by tons of medical professionals and nutritionists, so this isn't something I recommend. And it's just kind of to give an example of how you can improve your body and your lifestyle by tweaking things. So in this case, even though it was an extreme fasting he still lost a lot of weight, and his body still was able to survive, obviously, and he got in better shape. So this was more like to prove a point of the benefits of fasting. But yeah, I wouldn't recommend anyone go a year without eating anything.
Yeah. No, it is. It's interesting because there's that whole discussion of whether or not weight loss is simply a measure of calories in, calories out. People like to say it's genetic and all of that. And this was clearly a proof of concept that this guy was drastically overweight and was able to cut out calories and lose weight. It was, sounds like it was that simple.
Yep. So according to the notes that I got here, so once the glucose from your last meal runs out, you have about, let me repeat that. So you carry a semi-permanent half a kilogram to a kilogram of solids in your gut after your last meal. And the glucose from that last meal runs out after about 8 hours. So after that runs out, you start burning up a chemical called glycogen. And it's basically a bunch of glucose molecules that are used for energy. And it's stored in your muscles and your liver. So after that, after glycogen runs out, you have 48 hours for that. Once it runs out in 2 days or so, your body starts using different sources of energy. The point is that at the end of all those phases, your body's left with fat. And then that's when it starts breaking down fat into two separate chemicals. One of them is called glycerol, and the other are free fatty acids. So your brain and your body can run on that glucose and the ketones until you finally run out of fat. So apparently this guy had a ton of fuel to survive for over a year on his body. That's why he was okay with just taking vitamins and potassium. So hopefully that clarifies as to how it actually worked. And so, yeah, if you are just 10 or 20 pounds overweight, I don't recommend going over a few days of fasting.
Yeah, intermittent fasting is huge. Through an unrelated reason, practiced intermittent fasting about once a month when I was young. And just because of my lifestyle, I generally eat once every 12 to 15 hours. And so I think that contributes a lot to my physical makeup, which I'm lean and don't tend to put on fat easily unless I'm not taking care of myself. I'm eating a lot of junk. But I do notice, I read something, and I hate to go into it without a lot of detail, but I did read, or I was listening to Rhonda Patrick. She was talking about how young people who eat garbage, essentially, you know, crappy food with low nutritional value, actually develop a more efficient metabolic system that can get as much out of what little nutrients they are in the food they consume. And as they get older, if they begin to eat healthier foods or higher nutrient density foods, that metabolic efficiency stays with them, and they actually gain a lot of weight because their body stores all those nutrients away in the event that they go back to their detrimental dietary habits.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't know that. Speaking of...
Whereas people who eat healthier foods tend to have, I guess, a more normalized process of eliminating excess or unnatural or excess or unnecessary nutrients from food, excess fat, that kind of thing. And so it isn't stored as easily.
Wow, that's interesting. Speaking of Dr. Rhonda Patrick, I saw her Twitter feed yesterday, and she tweeted this study on coffee consumption and how it may lower the risk of certain cancers by up to 20%, and type 2 diabetes and Parkinson's disease up to 30%. So,
wow.
It's funny because we were talking about coffee versus just isolated caffeine or energy drinks or supplements. Yeah, so according to this study that Dr. Rhonda Patrick tweeted on Twitter, coffee consumption may lower the risk of certain types of cancers by up to 20%. And type 2 diabetes and Parkinson's disease by up to 30%. So that goes back to what we were talking about on our last episode, in which we were curious as to why coffee might be more beneficial to consume versus just caffeine on its own. So there you go. Here's a recent study that proves that coffee consumption is actually good for you.
Yeah, I was just reading a little document where they were talking about, it wasn't a study, it was just a discussion, but they did a major meta-analysis of like 120 coffee studies, because they were, the scientists doing the analysis did a meta-analysis of meta-analyses, because they were frustrated by the is it good for you, is it bad for you thing, and essentially determined that it was generally good in moderation, that it had a lot of benefits on the circulatory system and that kind of thing.
It also goes back to what we were talking about earlier about the phytochemicals in coffee and how we really don't know what exactly in coffee is so good for us. So we know that caffeine on its own can be detrimental to one's health, but coffee has caffeine in it and it seems to be good for us. So what exactly is in coffee that is so miraculous to be healthy for us or be good for us? That warrants a lot more research into the other phytochemicals in coffee and their effects on our health, in my opinion.
Yeah, you know, the more I read about antioxidants, I have low levels of superoxide dismutase, which means that my body is more susceptible to free radicals, like oxidating free radicals. And so antioxidants are particularly important for me, but the more I read about them, the more I see them as really important. Longan, which I just mentioned, has a lot of antioxidants. People have kind of gone antioxidant crazy, and too much is bad for you. Your body needs to be able to naturally remove antioxidants as well. But I would bet money that the antioxidant profile of coffee is a major contributor to its health bet.
Yeah, I agree. Just so curious, like which antioxidants are so good that they're preventing caffeine from hurting us. That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, actually that we talked about that, and it was found to prevent DNA from repairing itself. So it is something that shouldn't be taken on its own. Even though I've still been taking caffeine on its own, I'm trying to transition to coffee. But yeah, I recommend that if you haven't taken the plunge and moved to supplements, to just stick with coffee, natural organic coffee or teas, and get your caffeine and your energy needs from organic sources. So our next topic is Gastrodia alata, which is called Tianma in Asian culture, or at least in Chinese medicine. It's called Tianma. What can you tell us about that?
I found this one in my Chinese Materia Medica, but it was in the oldest known version of the Chinese Materia Medica, along with two other members of the orchid family. So it's one of the oldest known plants in the Chinese medicinal arsenal. It has antidepressant effects. The water extract also improves neurotrophic regulation in chronic social defeat stress models. Basically, they took mice and put them in an inescapable situation. I believe they put them in a water trap where they couldn't get out. And Gastrodia alata supplementation improved their level of determination to actually overcome the trap that they were in. Obviously, the trap was designed not to allow them to, but where most mice would
quit.
Yeah, this sounds so pseudoscientific, but where most mice would give up, basically the mice treated with Gastrodia alata continued to fight, continued to try and get out.
Isn't it also like nicknamed as something to do with like the like willpower? I think I saw something about that. Really? Yeah, I read something about Gastrodia being referred to as a will increaser or something.
Huh. I did not find that. I wonder if Tianma means something. Because a lot of those Chinese names, especially the old ones, were combination of words. They weren't individual names.
Yeah. I might be confusing it with something else, but it is apparently a will increaser. at least it increases your willpower. According to what I found, it's also been used for headaches, convulsions, hypertension, and neurodegenerative diseases. Potential uses in Alzheimer's disease, Parkinson's, and Huntington's diseases. So this is something that is definitely beneficial, apparently, to the mind.
Yeah, you know, I see the wind thing coming up again. It extinguishes wind. And it says that this formula is used for liver wind syndrome, which includes headache, dizziness, and high blood pressure. Oh. So that kind of gives a hint towards what this Chinese term for biological wind is.
Wow.
So in addition, it's got a really cool, similar to Euphoria Longan, it has a really cool combination of effects that all target neuronal growth and restructuring. It downregulates the negative regulators SLIT1 and RHOA, which reduce neuronal cytoskeletal remodeling, basically reducing neurite growth in the cytoskeleton and the brain, which paves the way for neuronal growth. By reducing these negative or these inhibitors of neuronal growth, it allows for other things like brain-derived neurotrophic factor to ramp up and improve neuronal growth. It also increases CRMP2 and PFN1, which are positive regulators of neuronal growth. So you kind of have the negative being reduced and the positive being increased, which is kind of a double hit for neural regeneration or growth.
Yeah.
And this is one that I just found right before we started recording, but was interesting. It decreases PHF8 levels, increases the expression of serotonin receptors, HTR1A and HTR2A, and promotes resistance to stress-induced anxiety and depression via downregulation of its target gene. I wasn't able to find what that target gene was before we went on, but we saw from the original study I mentioned that it does reduce anxiety and depression. I think I haven't mentioned yet, but when they put the mice that experienced what they called social defeat or chronic social defeat, these mice were quicker to recover from the anxiety and depression effects and begin to socialize with the other mice in the holding cells that they were in.
Wow. This is a very interesting. Do you know if there are currently sources that are selling it as a supplement, or do you have to like buy the actual herb and turn it into a tea or something?
I know that you can buy gastridin, which is one of the more prolific compounds in Gastrodia elata, and it's one of the most recognized for being beneficial as a standalone supplement. I don't know. I would be more interested in the whole fruit now that I've been, or the whole plant now that I'm getting more into fruits and veggies, because I think there are a lot of, while I've really enjoyed all of these, the racetams and all of the, I've tried some crazy stuff. It's more interesting to me now to have these whole fruit bodies or whole vegetables that can be used for a broad spectrum effect.
So yeah, one thing I wanted to mention was if anybody knows where we can get any of these herbs or supplements or substances, please let us know. As long as they are reputable, we wouldn't mind letting our listeners know where to also purchase them. So do let us know. Another thing what we wanted to talk about today was L-DOPA. It seems to be a very popular substance that among nootropics users. So Seth, you said you had taken L-DOPA before, right?
Yeah, I've used it before, both alone and in a supplement that I took for a while. It converts to dopamine in the CNS and PNS. It's basically as close as you can get to supplementing dopamine directly. Usually it's taken for Parkinson's with something like carbidopa, which inhibits its conversion into dopamine in the peripheral nervous system so that it can get to the brain where it actually needs to be. It also reduces side effects. We see this a lot with other things where you take a supplement and it converts to serotonin or dopamine or converts in the gut and actually exerts a lot of negative effects on the body and has a lot of side effects. I did notice when I took it I never took it chronically because I was kind of uncomfortable with it when I had it in pure form. But for the sake of testing the supplement that I took on its own and properly, I did take it for a full 3 weeks, I believe, and found that there was a noticeable mood disruption when I came off of it. I did feel like I had a lower mood, lower motivation. And so I wonder whether or not L-DOPA can be used chronically and used safely in states of normal health. You know, obviously, if you've got Parkinson's, it's better to take it chronically and know that you're just going to take it forever because you need to treat a disease than in a healthy person where you may actually cause dysfunction in the long run.
Yeah.
And this was actually the first one. This is the first question I've got since we started N=1 that I thought we'd address on the podcast. Somebody's been reaching out to me a lot about various things that might help them with their anxiety and depression. I know a lot of people like L-DOPA for that, but I'm advocating caution here. This is not something you want to take long term.
Yeah, of course. This is something that people that have Alzheimer's need to take. So it's not something that a healthy human being should take on a consistent basis. I've also had some questions from some people in the community, and a lot of them ask questions that are very direct in terms of, like, should I take this to solve this? And unfortunately, I can't answer questions like that because I'm an American citizen, and that's breaking the law. And I'm also an ethical person, so I don't want to say, yeah, take this, it'll solve that, because it's I'm not a professional, I'm not a physician, so I don't feel comfortable answering questions like that. I can suggest things to try out, but when you ask questions to somebody, for example, myself or maybe even Seth, you know, it's good to take note and understand that we can't really give you conclusive solutions to problems that you may be having. We can just give recommendations of where to look. So just wanted to mention that.
Yeah, that's something worth touching on. There's a big difference between being knowledgeable about something like John and I are. And I've been doing this for over five years now. So I know a fair amount about it. But it hasn't been a highly directed formal education. It's been something that I've been experimenting with personally, trying myself, that kind of thing. So when somebody reaches out to me and says, hey, how do I deal with anxiety? I haven't experienced long-term chronic anxiety. So I wouldn't even be able to tell somebody what functionally has worked for me. I have had bouts of depression. I think that's a normal thing for somebody with my genetic profile. But it's not really my place to say what will work for somebody. And I think that it would be offering false hope to say, hey, take this herb, it'll solve it. If you have real medical problems or real dysfunction, you need medical help. It's not that I'm saying that you're sick or that there's something wrong with you, but there's something that needs to be addressed there that's way deeper than I think an herb will be able to help with, at least this directionless chasing of different plants and pharmaceuticals that might help. Go see a doctor. And if you don't like that doctor, or he doesn't tell you something that you like, if you don't like SSRIs, that's cool. But find a doctor that listens to you and actually wants to help you. That may be expensive, but what's more valuable? Having a high quality of life where you're healthy and you're taking good care of yourself, or chasing all of these plants and pharmaceuticals and trying different things and possibly throwing yourself into greater dysfunction by constantly changing highly active substances that are changing how your body works on a regular basis. I see people who change the self-medication regimen that they're on every other week. And that really bothers me. I don't want people to be listening to our podcast or in our group chasing euphoria or chasing, you know, short-term solutions to long-term problems. There is a way to solve a lot of these problems properly.
Exactly. And anything we mention, obviously, like we mentioned a few herbs that can help you with anxiety or depression or whatever it is. Obviously, we're mentioning it like as a way, as something to look into. We're not saying go ahead and take it. We're saying look into it, talk to your physician, do your research, and possibly, you know, add it to your daily regimen and see how that helps what you're currently doing. But we're not saying just, you know, this is your solution to your problem. So just keep that in mind, guys.
Yeah. You know best for yourself, right? You know whether or not something's working for you. If SSRIs make you feel like a zombie, talk to your doctor and tell them, hey, these make me feel like a zombie. This isn't an improvement. It's just a slight reduction in effects. Exactly. It's not something that should be, you know, you should be aware of what's going on in your body. You should be aware of how these things are affecting you. And you should be telling your doctor about those effects. But you shouldn't be talking to me or John about real medical problems and how they can be treated.
Exactly.
You know, I can recommend rhodiola for occasional stress, you know, because I know that it works for me and occasional stress happens. But real dysfunction needs a longer term solution than I think anything a supplement is going to offer.
Yep. Agreed. So, yeah, that concludes our episode 3. Seth and I plan on doing live streams every now and then. We might do that next. So stay tuned. Please like our Facebook page, N=1 Podcast. And if you have any questions, send it to us. We would like to answer them in our next episode. We're going to try very hard to make it every 2 weeks. But if you don't hear from us in 2 weeks, just bug us and that'll probably get us going. So thanks for tuning in, guys, and talk to you soon. We'll be right back.